As we bring light into our homes and prepare for a Christmas festive season, lenders should lend to meet the need of customers. Yet, there are litigation against the government for removing winter fuel payment for pensioners. Welcome to Debt Talk Podcast with me, your host, Rippon Ray. This month, I'm speaking about Christmas festive worries. To navigate this month's podcast, I have Michael Ogba Davidson, organizer for Unite the Union and writer in debt. I have also Alison Perry, a lead debt coach from Christian Against Poverty, who supports vulnerable communities in financial hardship and guides them. My panel members are also to provide top tips to Debt Talk podcast listeners near the end of the podcast to support communities who are struggling during this festive season. Let me get Michael into the conversation to understand what is happening in his locality. Also, as a community member, what are you seeing and hearing in your community?
What I'm seeing and hearing is real disillusionment. We've obviously had a general election this year and millions of people pinning their hopes on change, and that's not been delivered. Since the general election, we've seen the energy price cap that's gone up by £170. And in terms of pensioners, obviously, as we'll get on to in more detail, the winter fuel payment withdrawn for the majority of pensioners. And read some interesting research recently by Joseph Rowntree Foundation, which is pointing out that people expect the new government to deliver on cost of living rapidly. And that's, we're not seeing that. We're seeing promises of change 5 or 10 years down the line, and how that's translating in communities is real disillusionment. And I think a dangerous cynicism around the ability of politics to deliver. So I'm very worried about that, both the practical sense, people's lives are not improving, and actually people's trust in politics to improve their lives is diminishing too.
We heard about the positive change, and as you mentioned it, on into winter fuel payment. What would you say to the government that we need to be prudent with our public finances?
We're the sixth richest country in the world. The problem is that the money's in the wrong place. We've got, you know, for the last 45 years, we've had increasing income inequality. The gap between the very well off and the majority of us is getting wider. And we need urgent action on that. There is money there. If we look at something like a wealth tax on the top 1%, that could generate, we reckon, about $22 billion a year, which dwarfs the amount that can be saved by things like the winter fuel payment cuts. We look at the profits that, say, the oil and gas sector, the energy sector, has generated over the last few years. Well, our bills have gone up, you know, bills have more than doubled compared to before the pandemic, but actually the profits of companies in those industries have doubled or trebled in some cases. So the money is there. We need a government that's bold enough to tax that money and not go for easy targets, or what they may have thought were easy targets, like pensions.
Unite the Union, of which you are an organiser, it is bringing a case to court against the government. Why is that?
Well, yeah, because I think we look at the decision to scrap winter fuel payments for 10 million pensioners, I think, universally unpopular. It won't do what it set out to do. It will not save significant amounts of money. And the really worrying thing for us are the people who are going to fall through the gaps by pegging winter fuel payment to pension credit entitlement. There's a persistent kind of 750,000 plus pensioners who should be getting pension credit, but don't. And no one, you know, government, your DWP, local authorities, charities, for years and years, people have tried to attack that problem, and it's never worked. So by attaching it to pension credit, you're basically saying there are some people we're just gonna ignore. They're gonna fall through the cracks and we don't care about it, and that's not on. So you'll be aware, as well as I mean, Unite has begun judicial review proceedings, which is uncharted territory, really. In Scotland, Govan Law Centre are doing something similar. And what we're looking at really is we have a number of our members who are claimants in that judicial review. And what we're looking at really is the procedure that it followed, because it was almost the first thing the new government did. And it's politically baffling. Why would you do that? And the speed with which it was done. So we know there was no impact assessment done. We know there was a very crude assessment done, which has been recently published, which showed either 50 or 100,000 additional pensioners pushed into poverty. But there's no full impact assessment being done. It was not referred to the Social Security Advisory Committee. There's a statutory obligation to do that, unless it's an urgent change. And I don't. There's no possible way you could argue that situation was urgent, in the same way that, for example, changes during the pandemic might have been urgent. This was not urgent. It was rushed through for, we'd argue, political grounds. And critically, there's no impact assessment being done. So we've got the government are going into this with no idea how it will affect, for example, disabled pensioners. So without that research, you can't make a rational decision. So they failed on what's called the Tameside duty, the broad duty of public bodies to properly research before making a change, and also the Public Sector Equality duty from the Equality Act. So I believe there's a fairly compelling case for the change to be withdrawn.
Thanks for this, Michael. But apart from legal action, what does your organization, and as a representative of a union member, actually offers, let's say, when pensioners and others who are struggling, apart from litigation?
Well, really, litigation is quite rare for us as a union. How we would normally do things, what we're doing with this is the power of collective action from our members. So you might have seen really all around the country, we've got pensioners, our retired members, mobilizing their communities with to put pressure on their local MPs. We've had protests at Parliament, at Stormont and Holyrood, and the devolved administrations. We're starting to see movement. So we've seen the Northern Ireland and Scottish governments under pressure from the public, led by Unite. We're starting to see movement and mitigation. So it's working. So the power of a trade union is the power of collective action. Litigation really is a bit of a it's a tactic, but it's not our key tactic. So so we've been doing an awful lot of that. So we've got 100,000 retired members, and they're furious with this. So we've got actions going off all over the country as part of this campaign.
You also have had one foot in the disadvantaged sector. I know you also write about it on quarterly accounts produced by Institute of Money Advisors. So, what is the debt sector is saying since you have that foot in the sector on this issue?
It's fairly obvious the problems with what's happening with winter fuel payment. I'm hearing from colleagues in the debt advice sector the same thing. It's obviously not the only pressing problem. We've got things like the two-child limit, the benefit cap, which overall would have a much more, much bigger impact. I mean, one thing we need to dispel is the idea of the myth of the millionaire pensioner. And it's often rolled out, people saying, well, Mick Jagger gets the winter fuel payment as a way of sort of diminishing its importance. I was interested to see a couple of days ago, Age UK, some research they published, saying 77% of recipients of winter fuel payment last year spent it on fuel or fuel-related costs. So it is actually doing what it's intended to do. So I think there's a big piece of work that we need to do around getting rid of those myths. But I'd be interested to hear what, you know, what opinions our debt advisors have about the impact of the winter fuel payment as well.
Thank you, Michael. Let me get Alison from Christian Against Poverty, who actually did advises on debt-related matters. Alison, the debt sector is no doubt going to feel a reduction in clients in December, whilst lending and spending goes up during this period. But we are no doubt going to see clients who are mentally challenged in and having mental difficulties. Where does a debt advice sector come into play when exploring clients who are struggling mentally and spending excessively?
Great question. There is definitely an undisputed link between debt and mental health, both as a cause and an effect. At Christians Against Poverty, we release a client report every year. And last year, 23% of all CAP clients cited mental ill health as the primary reason for their debt crisis. And shockingly, 46% of our new clients said they had attempted or considered suicide as a way of dealing with their debt. And we just know that the financial difficulties impact, mental health so desperately. The things that you've already been talking about, pensioners not receiving winter fuel payment. Nobody is exempt from the mental health pressures that are caused by going into debt to pay for, life's essentials. But it's interesting the question that you then said about spending excessively. And, just to bring some really clear facts into the situation, and we know this again from all of our research into our clients, that the biggest reason for our clients at Christians Against Poverty borrowing money is to pay household bills. It is borrowing to survive. The average level of debt that one of our clients has is around £11,500. And the majority of those are what we would call priority debts, council tax, water, and energy arrears. In terms of the myth that Michael's already talked about, the myth that people are in debt because they are spending excessively is needs to be busted, because that adds to stress, it adds to shame, it adds to people not seeking help because they're worried about being judged. And struggling just to survive, let alone thrive, is not okay, as Michael has already said, in the sixth wealthiest nation in the world.
The debt advice sector speaks about standard financial statement when you're dealing with a client and looking at overall option. What is this standard financial statement?
Okay, so SFS for short, or Standard Financial Statement. It's a standard tool used by the debt advice sector in the UK, and it summarises people's income and outgoings along with any debts that they owe, together with a single set of spending guidelines. And those spending guidelines are set by the government. They are different across the devolved nations, but there are essentially they are acceptable levels of monthly expenditure. So those flexible costs of things such as communication and leisure, food and housekeeping, and personal costs, and they're based on the number of adults and children of different ages in the household. So when a client comes to us with with wanting debt advice, that is the first thing that under FCA, Financial Conduct Authority regulations, we're required to look at their spending patterns. So if there was any evidence of excessive spending, we would see those, and we are obligated to provide them with a budget that would bring anything down to that. But I think, to go back to that reality, that we know from a YouGov poll that we did at Christians Against Poverty this year, that 22% of adults in the UK are struggling with a budget that fails to cover their essential costs. So they're living with what we would call a deficit budget. And in fact, almost half of all CAP clients that we advised last year had an unsustainable budget. So that's not about it's not about spending excessively on luxuries. It's that we have got to a point where the essentials are excessively overcharged for now. So food, energy, and housing just means that people have inadequate income and they are resorting to desperate measures to survive. They're skipping meals, they limit utility usage, they borrow informally, and they even sell possessions. It's systematic intervention that's needed for so many. We've heard about pensioners. That's just one of the many people struggling to survive. People with children have to resort to the, incredibly desperate measures. And if I may, I just wanted to share a quick story to bring this to life. So there's a wonderful couple and family. They're called Sam and Paul. They have very generously shared their story as part of our Christians Against Poverty winter appeal. They went through their own financial crisis last year. They were running a successful construction business, working really hard, doing that. And all of the costs, as we know, of building materials went up. He was having to work harder and harder because he'd already priced jobs and stuff. Paul had a stroke. He literally, in his 40s, had a stroke due to that issue. They shrunk their lives, in their own words. They cut back on absolutely everything. And yet, even though they were acting totally responsibly, they just got to a point when they couldn't cut back any further. They were cutting back on not eating and not heating their home. They're in a very, very different place now. They came to us, fortunately, received some emergency help from Christians Against Poverty through the local church, and are now entirely debt-free. But that took a lot of boldness and courage and a very hard journey. So, I imagine that there are the small minority where excessive spending can get out of control, and there's always things that we can always do, and there is an element of personal responsibility. But our experience is the many, many people coming to us, that is not the issue. It's that they don't have sufficient income to cover the rising costs, and when things like key benefits are removed, as we've already talked about, that takes somebody from maybe just surviving into it just tips them over the edge.
To buy some time whilst we explore a person's situation and provide that person with a bit of breathing space, central government recently introduced two types of breathing space for communities who are struggling. What is the difference between, let's say, mental health breathing space and the standard breathing space?
Okay, yeah, great question again. So breathing space, which is also known as the debt respite scheme. So, and again, I'm just going to talk for England and Wales at the moment because the arrangements for some of the other devolved nations are slightly different. But basically, if you live in England and Wales, you can get temporary protection from your creditors whilst you get debt advice and make a plan. That scheme is called breathing space. And you get that temporary protection for up to 60 days, and you'll still need to make your debt repayments. But if you get that, no enforcement action can be taken against you. And your creditors can't add any interest or charges to your debt. So that's almost the statutory breathing space that you can get through a debt advice organisation or charity. The mental health breathing space is you're only eligible for that if you are getting what is described as mental health crisis treatment, and your protection from creditors will last longer. So it will last the length of your treatment plus another 30 days. But the bar to apply for that is very, very high. It needs sign off from a mental health crisis professional and has to be continually renewed. And actually, some of the credit industry or sector have made successful legal challenges to people being kept in mental health breathing space because they weren't receiving crisis mental health care. So yes, we've already talked about obviously the link between mental health, and so many of our clients have mental health issues, but they would not qualify for that higher bar of crisis mental health breathing space. And I think it is a careful balance because there are people in, you know, desperate need of the debt support and to be given the breathing space. And sometimes it's interesting that the most effective breathing space can be having actually asked for help from a charity or a nonprofit debt organization, because that in itself then provides and empowers often the client to be able to give a piece of, you know, a card to the enforcement agencies. So we would say to any listeners or anybody struggling, reach out for the help, because that in itself can start to alleviate so much of the stress. And I mentioned Sam and Paul, our wonderful clients who've shared their story as part of our Christmas appeal this year. And what is fabulous is that they testified to just reaching for help meant that, again, they were empowered with a card to give to any enforcement agency that came to them saying, we're now working with Christians Against Poverty, but also got them some emergency aid, which we provided through the local church. And that actually freed their mind to go, the immediate pressure is off us. We can get through Christmas and then we can, you know, go through the debt advice process. So I think there's the statutory breathing space, but there's also very practical breathing space that asking for help can bring.
You explore many ways, no doubt, to kind of write off the debt, formal, informal. But when it comes to mental health is concerned, where does mental health come into play when write off the debt is concerned, and what evidence do you need to get to that?
At Christians Against Poverty, we obviously see the whole person and we are advocating for them with creditors whilst working through the debt advice, seeking resolutions. And because we've been around for, you know, 28 years now and have really great relationships with key creditors, with key utility companies, and so we are very well respected in order to tap into their own policies and practices for vulnerable clients. And that is probably that advocacy that we do on the phone and on the ground with clients is probably the most important part of the debt process. And so often information and evidence from referral agencies, so it could be a support worker and more, we can use those as part of building the case in order to advocate in terms of what are the debts that could be written off as part of that process. However, and I think it's important to say this, about 70% of our clients at Christians Against Poverty go through some form of insolvency. So a debt relief order or bankruptcy as their route out of debt, because they're just not in a position to be able to make repayments over a significant period of time. And the eligibility for those are not based on mental health or other forms of, you know, or health issues. The evidence is around their income, expenditure and assets. So in a way, I think maybe it reassures some of your listeners, I don't know, that actually, because the debt advice sector is so regulated, somebody that potentially has a very serious mental health issue would have the same levels of, you know, rights and responsibilities around how they're treated. So it isn't you've got severe crisis mental health, it means that the debts would automatically be written off. It is regulated in fact that their situation is seen in the round, and we use that information to advocate for them, as well as giving them the absolutely best debt advice for their individual situation, so it is sustainable for the future.
Alison, you've already covered aspects of your annual impact report. Let's just go deeper into the report and then what remedies do you suggest?
So yes, as I say, we, our annual client report identifies a lots of things that are, you know, are pretty shocking. I've already mentioned some of those. One of the things that I think, because our service at Christians Against Poverty is face to face and is local and always comes through the local church. And I would be keen to also say that although we are Christians Against Poverty, we absolutely work with people of no faith, of every faith. And we obviously have to, we work with clients regardless of any protected characteristics. But yeah, we do always work through the local church. But I think there's elements of our service that, because it is face to face and it is local, actually mean that we as an organisation will work with some people that potentially other organisations are not best placed to work with, which I think means that we deal with people with greater levels of vulnerability than maybe some other organisations would. I think that's fair to say. And 64% of our clients last year had at least one key support issue. And a key support issue is logged to show that a client requires some additional support. So examples could be visual and hearing impairments or other accessibility limitations, limited literacy skills and mental health challenges. But yes, 64% of all of our new clients had one of those additional support issues, which is massive, and had quite often gone to maybe another agency to start with, and they just couldn't give them the level of support. And, you know, we see that as part of our calling at Christians Against Poverty. We are here for people that perhaps our service is just more suited for. And some of those issues are related to things like post-traumatic stress disorder. About 8% of our new clients had that, which could be related to many things, but often it can be to do with, you know, maybe a violent or domestic abuse and past. So you can straight away see that that is that's huge. It is people that have complex needs, of which their debt issue is just one of them. And that can be related to things that just mean that dealing with bills, spending and stuff are just exacerbated. So this isn't a level playing field in terms of somebody that would be able to sort things out themselves. And then you asked me a question about the remedies. It's a massive challenge. And I think there are some real systemic changes that are needed. We mentioned breathing space. And one of the things that we do is that we do obviously campaign for systemic change. And we talk about what are the things that are needed from a government policy perspective. And definitely we would ask that around the mental health and breathing space, that there is a better referral link between mental health support and free debt advice. So wherever you see, wherever support workers or GPs are even seeing people with mental health issues, then to be offered debt advice would be really, really key. And we would actually ask to expand that statutory mental health breathing space into Northern Ireland, where it isn't at the moment, and also for it to be extended to individuals receiving a diagnosis of a terminal illness when clearly they can't deal with their debts at that point. So to be offered some breathing space in that particular area. So yes, I think those are some things. We'd love to see more government support for community-based initiatives to pool and share resources, such as social supermarkets, food pantries, fuel bank vouchers and item libraries to really help people. And then another one is around a help to repay scheme that would support individuals struggling with energy arrears, funded through, we've already mentioned, the incredible profits that utility companies make. So yes, yeah, some sort of repayment matching to help people get out of debt sooner, or provide full debt relief based on their level of need. And then we would love to see more investment in the debt advice sector. CAP, as an organisation, we receive Certainly in England and Wales, no statutory funding, and our income, you know, our income continues to reduce while demand absolutely increases. We would love to see more authorised free debt advice and available. But the final one I'll mention is that we would really encourage increased regulation of credit marketing and advertising, providing safeguards on language, location of advertisement and consumer or customer profiling. The whole buy now, pay later sector is very unregulated. We would, you know, love to see way more regulation into the fact that various companies can advertise buy now, pay later on anything from white goods right through to your takeaway foods, which is not an area that anybody should be going into debt, in order to make a sustained effort to make sure that people who are eligible for key benefits such as pension credits are actually given those. There is some way of contacting people to say you are entitled and could be eligible for this, you should not miss out on this key payment, is absolutely essential, because the people that are most vulnerable are the ones who we can guarantee won't be receiving key benefits.
Thank you, Alison. For those who are listening to Debt Talk and want to share your experience on a subject of your choice or want to take part on Debt Talk, you can get in touch with me on X, yourdrdebt.com, or email me, ripon.ray@yourdrdebt.com. Let me go back to my panel members to get them to provide top tips to Debt Talk listeners on Christmas festive worries. Let me now start with Michael from Unite the Union.
At Christmas, we look forward to the turning of the year, and we look forward to New Year's resolutions and what we're going to change about our lives in the year ahead. And I think my message, unsurprisingly, as a trade unionist, is that joining a trade union is an investment. Consistently, trade union membership correlates with better pay and more tolerable conditions at work. If you are not in a union, join the union that's appropriate to your workplace. If you are in a union, then maybe set yourself a New Year's resolution to do a bit more, get a bit more active, go to some meetings, encourage your colleagues to join, because as workers, we're powerful together. And that applies to retired people too. Unite also has a section, a community section for non-working people. But the power of collective action, the power of working together to improve your lives and the lives of those around you, I think is a really important festive message. And the first step in that is joining a trade union.
Lovely. And finally, from Alison Berry, money coach from Christian Against Poverty.
So yeah, festive message. I would say that the first thing is, if you're struggling right now financially, bring it into the light, and be clear that there is no shame or judgment, especially over the last couple of years when even the most financially savvy amongst us have struggled to make things balance with increases across energy prices, food, petrol, you know, mortgage rates, everything. And if you're in crisis, please hear that there is a lot of support available, both from organisations like Christians Against Poverty or even your local council, food banks and stuff. There are definitely ways of getting help. I'd also recommend using something such as a benefits checker. We have one on our CAP website, capuk.org/calculator, just to see if there's anything that you could be eligible for, from council tax reduction to additional energy allowance and even pension credits. You know, have a look at that. And then I've just got some very top tips in terms of money, things to think about to fill this Christmas with joy. We'd always say prioritise quality time with your family, Think about giving a gift that counts, not just costs, you know, small thoughtful gestures. Manage expectations, you know, have the conversation with your family if you are struggling, you know, don't think that you've got to do it. Courtesy of Martin Lewis, he always talks about having a prenup agreement, a pre-Christmas no unnecessary presents pact. You know, you don't have to buy presents for anyone. And there's lots of free activities out there to do, local things. We'd always say look out for offers and discounts and stuff, but make sure that it just doesn't encourage you to spend more. All these clever marketing people trying to get you to spend more by offering a discount. And I would say that the time to start saving for Christmas 25 is right now. So maybe make a New Year's resolution to go on something like Christians Against Poverty money coaching course, just to give you some top tips to help you be a bit more savvy and come into January thinking about budgeting, not just January blues.
I would say a wholehearted thank you to my panel members for giving their precious time and share their knowledge for the benefit of those communities who are struggling during Christmas. Debt Talk podcast did invite Minister of Work and Pension, Secretary of State for Work and Pension, Liz Kendall, but we still wait to hear from Liz. But my next podcast is going to be on, as Alison pointed out, January Blues. Thank you for listening to Debt Talk Podcast with me, your host, Ripon Ray.